Welcome to Bringing Azure to Your Data Center. My name is Mark Krasinovich. I'm CTO of Azure, and I've got up here with me a couple of other speakers.
I'm Jeffrey Snover, Distinguished Engineer and Lead Architect for Windows Server and System Center.
And I'm Jeremy Winter, and I'm on point for all System Center and the management we do inside your data centers.
Now, I wanted to set the context for this presentation, which really is a context-setting presentation. In fact, there's a number of sessions throughout the next few days that go deep into cloud-inspired infrastructure, bringing Azure onto your own terms, onto your own infrastructure. And what this session is doing is setting a framework that you can look at all of those holistically, see how they fit together into a larger story of how Azure and Server make it possible for you to adopt the cloud on your own terms and at your own pace. Now, I wanted to say one thing to just set expectations about this presentation. A lot of you hear my name or you hear Jeffrey's name on a presentation and you expect us to have lots of demos to show you. And we were told explicitly to keep this at a very high level, so there will be zero demos. In fact, we were warned, no demos or you guys are in deep stuff. So,
yeah.
I have to apologize for those of you expecting demos. There will be no demos.
But to just put that in context, right, there's so much stuff. What you guys, Azure alone, had like 500 features
this year.
There's so much content. This is such an exciting session. After this, we're going to be teeing up the 7-session area overviews. We're going to talk about the area and then tell you where to go. So you want to make sure you got a pen and a piece of paper. And so really, we're providing you an architect's view of the why behind the what. So there's plenty of time this week to give you the what's. In fact, we will be giving you hands-on demonstrations in our drill-down sessions. But this is really that kind of step back and give you the overarching narrative, like why did they do those things?
Perfect. And that'll be the same thing we cover in the System Center side. We're going to really work through some of the overall kind of shifts in the landscapes that we see happening. We're going to talk about some of the stuff you saw today in the keynote, from everything from services to what we're doing on our on-premises. So when I come back out on stage after the duo goes through a little bit of that, we'll run through how we're thinking about management and a lot of the technologies these guys are going to talk about. So I'll see you in the back.
See you guys. See you in a bit, Jeremy. All right. So just to get a feel for what we've got here in the audience, how many of you manage your own infrastructure today in your own on-prem data centers? So quite a few of you. How many of you develop applications for your lines of businesses? So just a few of you.
And how many of you use PowerShell?
And how many of you use sysinternals tools?
Oh, three. Three. Right there, Mark. Right there.
I think we saw way more hands on that one.
I saw three.
All right, so how many of you, I guess all of you have really kind of bought into the cloud. How many of you have already started a cloud transition? Already have your company doing something up in a public cloud or a hosted cloud?
Excellent.
That's great
to
see.
That's very good.
So this talk is definitely for you then, because what we're going to be explaining is how to manage that transition and how to do it on, like we said, your own terms, how to adopt the technologies that Microsoft's providing specifically to help you do that so that you can make a choice about where you run your infrastructure, where you run your applications, and make it possible for you to make that a late binding decision, and even one that you can change rapidly as the needs of your company evolve and as your company's transition to the cloud evolves.
You know, we have slides.
Yeah, we've got some slides to show you, too. So, Jeffrey, tell us about the transition that we're undergoing right here.
This is yours?
No, it's not. It's your slide.
My slide? Okay, so we're making the transition from the server to the cloud, sometimes in a coordinated way, sometimes a little less. Yeah, so basically, we're going to talk about how we make this transition from the data centers of yesterday to the cloud. And when we say the cloud, we don't necessarily mean the public cloud. We mean the public cloud, and we mean the private cloud, and we mean service provider clouds. So one of the differences between Microsoft and all the other players is that we want you to adopt the cloud on your terms, however you'd like to do that. Now, other people have a very vested interest in it's the public cloud, and they're going to badmouth the private cloud. Other people, they have a vested interest in the private cloud, and they're going to badmouth the public cloud. We have no interest in one solution or the other. Our only interest is making sure that you can succeed and gain the benefits of the cloud, whether you want to do that in the public cloud, the private cloud, or with a trusted service provider cloud.
And this kind of transition from going from traditional IT infrastructure, which we'll talk a little bit more about what that means in a second, to a cloud-optimized world is one that Microsoft's been going through for the last decade or so. Azure is now more than 5 years old out in public cloud land. And what we've had to do is change our engineering systems, change our technology, change our processes to make that transition possible, to make it so that we could really take advantage of the promise of what cloud gives you. Again, something we'll talk about here in some detail about what makes the cloud so attractive and why we want to move towards it.
Great. So let's talk about yesterday, right? A world where you had, you know, your data centers, right? Where you bought your server and you just like love that thing. You walk up to it, you brought your friends in, you took pictures. I have my server. I walk up and touch it, right? And things were very slow there. It took a long time to acquire a server, right? All those justifications like, do you really need a server? Why do you need that server? Well, let's go through an investment review board. Took so long to get that server. And then when it arrived on the dock, that was like the beginning of the journey, right? You had to unpack that thing. You had to get it provisioned. And the way we did this was, you know, with the tool of choice, the mouse. And these were all kind of handcrafted things. You put a lot of investment in your server. And what's now called, the DevOps guys call this, you know, either a snowflake server, you know, a unique item, or a pet. You manage it like a pet. And often you would over-provision things because you didn't really know what your true demand was. And then you'd have that awkward conversation with your boss, like, so you said we needed this really big box, but my utilization is this. So what's going on there? Anyway, so what happened was that that kind of style, just the economics of the data center of yesterday, forced us into a way of doing business that was very tactical, very defensive. And frankly, it was often difficult to connect the dots between IT and driving business value forward. Okay, and that's one of the most exciting things about the cloud is that shift.
And I'll say one of the other characterizations of that private cloud world is it's a very relatively static environment.
Yeah.
You're building these snowflake type applications and servers and infrastructure, and you're spending a lot of time on it because they don't change much, and actually you don't want to change them much. And what that brings is this rigidity and this inability to reproduce what you've already built. Everything becomes organically kind of grown, and you really then want to gold plate the thing, put it on very highly reliable hardware, because if that thing fails, who knows how to reconstruct it? It probably would take weeks or months to do so.
But right, and there's often a lot of fear around change, right? Because change is the root cause of all failures. So how do you do that? The traditional data center approach has been, well, you avoid change. You just don't do it. Or if you're going to do it very infrequently and test the heck out of it. The problem, of course, is in a modern world, in a cloud world, change is required to remain competitive. You want to be able to pick up innovation. So we have to create an environment where it's safe to adopt innovation as quickly as possible.
So how many people have shadow IT going on? People deploying virtual machines to a public cloud today? So a few of you do. One of the attractions...
Those are the people that know they do.
The rest of you do as well.
Yeah.
There are two types of companies in this world, those doing shadow IT and those that don't know they're doing shadow IT. Now, the reason that the people like the attraction of going to public clouds is that self-service provisioning of this infrastructure, of this virtualized infrastructure. I can create a few VMs in a few seconds. I can provision a database in a few seconds, something that through traditional IT processes goes through that flow that Jeffrey talked about, which literally can be weeks to months for somebody to be able to get that up and running. Really awesome for dev test environments. Really awesome for the department in your company that wants to go launch a marketing campaign and doesn't want to have to wait for IT to do it. What they get out of that agility is that in this instant self-service delivery is the ability to experiment, the ability to evolve quickly, to be able to respond to their customers, to your business's customers, in a way that will drive more money back into the business. So that marketing department launching that marketing campaign with a few clicks of the mouse, well, they can dev test that thing, deploy it to production when it's ready, again with a few clicks if they're doing it in a cloud infrastructure, go back and evolve and iterate, get feedback from customers, and have this very fast loop. Now, the problem with a lot of the systems that we're running today in traditional infrastructure is that they're not optimized for this very rapid cycle that delivers all this value, this cloud-optimized value. And so what we're trying to do here with bringing Azure into your own infrastructure is to give you that kind of agility that you can today only achieve with a public cloud like Azure, and make it so that you can deliver those kinds of benefits to your customers, your own users, your own people, application developers in your own company on your terms inside your data center. Because the fact is, this transition to the public cloud is going to take a while. I see some of you had already started to use a public cloud, some of you haven't started to use a public cloud or a hosted cloud. And even for those of you that say you're all in, you likely have a number of reasons that are going to prevent you from just turning off the lights in your own data center and going and wholesale into a public cloud in any kind of short time horizon. The fact is that there are data gravity issues. You've got data that's sitting in your own infrastructure that a public cloud is too far away from. You've got issues like regulatory concerns, compliance concerns, security concerns. Your own systems need to evolve to be able to deal with the world that spans the public cloud or a hosted cloud in your own on-premises data center. So this transition is going to take a while. But we still want to be able to deliver value today and be able to make that transition again on your own terms as you're going and evolving and starting to move workloads and starting to get a data gravity that's outside of your own private data center in some other data center like a public cloud. Now, one of the things that I always get asked is the public cloud going to save me? Is cloud really going to save me money? And my answer is, if you take a look at the raw dollars per compute cycle that you're going to be spending on a highly optimized traditional IT stack, running an application that you've spent time tuning and sizing right, you might not. You might actually save money on dollars per cycle that traditional IT way. The problem is you're losing on the agility side of it. And that agility side and that elasticity side that you get with a cloud infrastructure is what's going to deliver and give your money, your company back money. Money that is not dollars per cycle, but money that goes into being competitive in the business that you're in and generating revenue off the customers that are making use of this innovation that you're able to drive out into the world. Every company today, and you've heard probably other people say it, including Satya, every company is a software company today, and software company demands this kind of agility.
Yeah, I'd just like to say, a lot of companies, companies don't become successful by saving money. Companies become successful by making money. And what's so exciting about this phase of our industry is we're finally, after many, many years, being able to dial in this ability to turn software into money, right? Whether it's big data, analytics, et cetera. We're able to use computing to drive the business value. And when that's the case, guess what? The checkbooks come out. Like, hey, if I spend a dollar and get $1.50 back, that's a good investment. And that's what we get now when it's not just adopting infrastructure as service as a cloud, you need to adopt the full cloud mindset. And you'll hear more about that in the talk, not just about infrastructure, platform, manageability, et cetera.
And I've got a great example of how this returns. There's a company that is a great Azure partner, Towers Watson, that does risk management, financial analysis, market positioning, a very daily cycle kind of driven, where their customers and themselves get a huge amount of data from the day's activity on the markets across the country and data that's feeding in from a bunch of sources, and then they process it overnight so that by the next morning they can set up new positions and adjust their risk in various categories. By going to the public cloud, they were able to get this hyper kind of scale out solution that let them and their customers get answers in a fraction of the time that they were able to before on their own on-premises kind of traditional infrastructure. So, solving that question, hey, where market position should I have the next morning, sometimes took all night, and the answer was there just at the opening of the market the next morning. They go to the cloud, they scale out, they get that answer in an hour instead of the 12 hours that it used to take before. And what they do with that is they don't say, okay, I'm done. They say, I'm going to go back and refine that answer now. I've got more time now, so I can make the answer more meaningful and make it so that it has a higher return on the money that I'm throwing at the problem than I could before. So they might actually spend more dollars on the compute than they were in the past, yet they're making an order of magnitude more off of that same investment or the increased investment because they're able to get an answer that helps their business.
Yeah. Let's get the next slide.
Yep.
Yes, this is all just motivating this idea of bringing the cloud to you, right? That's what it's all about. That's what you're going to hear about, right? We want to be able to reduce this shadow IT so that you, instead of you thinking of your customers, if you're an IT person, instead of you thinking about your people as end users that you deliver something, you instead, they're customers who consume your services. So we want to create a world where you can create these services that then they can consume through self-service portals, et cetera, so that they get the agility without necessarily having to bang on your door to get things done. Right? So we want to simplify this experience. Now, a lot of people have tried to do the public or the private cloud and are kind of stuck there, right? They have had some challenges. We want to make it much simpler for you to be able to adopt, deploy, and operate a private a cloud of your own using Azure technologies. Right, so from an architect standpoint, right, the big animal picture standpoint, here are sort of the layers of the public cloud, or the of a cloud, right? So you've got the physical hardware. Now there, you've got, just got a dog's breakfast of devices, and if you try and manage each individual device as a unique entity, you're just gonna waste all your engineering effort and just can't do that. And so what we do is, on top of that, we produce this data center abstraction layer. Sometimes I've called that the DAL. We've talked about that in the past. And then on top of that, you have the data or the service plane, and then you want to have a control plane to be able to control those things, and then ultimately an operations and provisioning plane, say like tenant-facing administrative actions. So then, here's what we're going to talk about in this talk, right? How that maps, how those different layers map to the different functional areas. Both in compute, we have a set of standard APIs, and notice here we're talking about compute on, not on gold-plated hardware, but rather on industry standard servers, right? Sort of, you know, off-the-shelf, normal, everyday servers. How can you get great performance and great reliability from them? Then we'll talk about networking and software-defined networking. Crazy cool stuff there. Have we talked about that yet?
Software-defined networking?
Well, no, not what we've done. I guess this is the first time we've publicly. Yeah. So we've talked to you about software-defined networking. Wait till you see what's coming this week. Of course, storage and then security. Now, a lot of people will talk to you about the three things, right? Compute, networking, and storage. We include security. We are in the second phase, sort of a recommitment, and our second phase of the trustworthy computing, where we've embraced security and are going to go above and beyond what we've done in the past. In the past, we were very focused on protect the platform, and you'll see how we have a new approach to that. So we include all four of these.
So let's talk about compute first, and this is setting up the context for a session that's going to go deep dive into this particular area. Again, what we're really focused on is Azure-inspired infrastructure. And so let's talk a little bit about Azure and how Azure's dealt with compute. Back in 2010, when Azure launched, we were on the order of 100,000 instances, compute instances. Now we're on the order of millions of compute instances. And the only way we get to that kind of scale is through an architecture that is scale-out, that is elastic, and that is highly available underneath this kind of infrastructure. The traditional methods that we've talked about of running IT just don't work for that kind of scale. And underneath everything we're going to talk about today when it comes to cloud-optimized infrastructure is automation, this concept of automation. If you've got to babysit every one of those instances or every one of the servers those instances run on, your business is going to collapse under its own weight as your customers in your business drive you to deliver the kind of compute resources and data resources that they need to get their jobs done. The only way to tackle this problem is with automation and to use tools that help you automate. Some of the things we're going to be talking about a little later in the way that you map the infrastructure of an application in a way that enables automation. But it's that kind of automation and that kind of scale-out architecture that is what is powering the Azure cloud from a compute perspective today.
Yeah, no, some people might already not know this, but how many people are using virtualization Hyper-V today? Yeah, you are already taking advantage of Azure technology. Okay, so when Azure first started off, Windows Server was not up to the task. And so they went and split the code base and did a project called Red Dog. And that was what the original Azure was based on. We then looked at that, grabbed some of those technologies, and then incorporated them into Windows Server. And now Windows Server is the basis of all Azure. Everything's running Windows Server 2012, 2012 R2. And so you've already been benefiting from the nice integration between Azure and System Center. Azure and Windows Server. Now, we've always believed that virtualization was a mere stepping stone to the cloud. And that was a very easy thing to say. And with Windows Server 2012, we really achieved, you know, parity with the competition here. We had world-class virtualization. The other guy may have a feature here. We had a feature there. But effectively, you know, there's parity when it comes to virtualization. So now it makes it easier to have that conversation where we're saying, yeah, virtualization, just not that important. What really is important is the cloud. Let's have that conversation. And when we say the shift from virtualization to the cloud, really in 2012 R2 is where we've had our first Azure-inspired designs. And now with Windows Server 2016, we're taking this cloud-first innovation model and incorporating it into Windows Server. So this is very exciting stuff. Now, here's the thing you need to understand. In the context of Azure, we need to get maximal business value out of every single dollar we invest in hardware, right? We have a commercial interest in that. We also have a commercial interest in making sure that Azure is the world's best fabric to run any workload, Windows or Linux. And so we've invested in that, both performance and being able to support any workload, and we're taking those investments and now we're going to offer them to you as part of Windows Server 2006. So we've had world-class scale, performance, availability, continue to increase investments in that area. Storage quality of service comes to you in Windows Server 2016. We have improvements in our guest clustering to improve reliability. And of course, even in 2012, we had mission-critical scale for SQL, Exchange, SharePoint, et cetera. Basically, you can now confidently virtualize any workload. And we've had that for a while. Now, of course, in this release, we are also increasing our investment in the Linux support. So we did a lot of work around networking. The numbers there are just improving greatly. We added the hot remove and add of the virtual NIC, and we got virtual receive side scaling. So you can have very large Linux workloads that operate very efficiently. By the way, that stuff's very important when we get to software-defined networking, which we're going to talk to you about in just a minute. Now, all this cloud innovation is great, but it's not great if you can't innovate, if you can't adopt it. So we need to make it safe and easy for you to adopt innovation at a rapid rate. So Azure already has this. What were you calling it?
So rolling updates with rolling zero updates. Downtime. Yeah, this is one of the expectations, though, that your customers also get from working with the cloud, and what their businesses need is continuous availability. And now the traditional way of delivering continuous availability is one gold-plated box that you scale up over time. Again, kind of a static infrastructure mentality. The mentality in the public cloud is scale it out. And you can scale out very quickly. We can, if you're familiar with auto-scaling for virtual machines, press a button, move a slider, do a PowerShell command, and spin up a few extra VMs and have that workload now scaled out instantly to handle more load.
Yeah.
Also, when you're talking about updates now to that software that's running on top of it, or the infrastructure itself, you don't want downtime. Again, because of that continuous availability that customers and your users, your end users, and your own customers of your companies expect. And so for that, we support in Azure rolling upgrades of our infrastructure. When we update our storage service or our fabric controller in Azure, we don't tell you, you don't know, because all of that is zero time, downtime rolling upgrades, heavily monitored to make sure that we're not rolling out something that is causing a regression.
That's enough.
And it could roll back.
That's enough.
All right, fine.
So, Server 2016.
Just get excited about that. So.
It's exciting stuff. We did not have that in the past. With Windows Server 2016 now, we have rolling cluster upgrades. Rolling cluster upgrades. So what does that mean? That means you got a cluster, take one of those machines out, you bring it back, bring it to the next version of the operating system. It can join the cluster operating at a lower cluster functional level. You do that until you're ready, and then when you're ready, you switch and move everything up to the next cluster level. Again, without service downtime. So lots of details, but it's very exciting stuff. Again, we're learning it's not just about technology. Sort of in the past, we had this mindset of, hey, we produce great software, we put it on a DVD, and we ship it, and then we move on to the next one. The lesson we learned in Azure was, my friend, you know, when you have a build, that is the beginning of the journey. Diagnostics are important, operations are important, et cetera. So we're taking those lessons, changing the software, and now you'll be able to benefit from that. Okay, so we got some great sessions, drill down sessions in these two areas. The first, you want to make a note of these. These are the area overviews. So they're going to take what we just talked about and give you the demos and go to the next layer of detail. So the first is the server virtualization overview, platform, vision, and strategy. And that's May 5th. What's today?
I think today's May 4th.
So that's tomorrow at 9 a.m. And then the next day, we have Microsoft Loves Linux. Really, you know, I've got to tell you, one of my proudest moments of the year was seeing Satya on stage with that slide saying Microsoft loves Linux. And a lot of people find that odd that the lead architect for Windows Server would be proud of a moment like that. And the reason I am is because it's a very clear signal from our boss to go where the customers are, which completely reinforces our model of helping you adopt the cloud in any terms you want, whether you want it public or private or with a third party. Our job is to make you successful, not to sell a particular product. Okay? So,
all right, the next area we're going to talk about is networking. And you've heard this term software-defined data center. Software-defined networking was really the first area that the tech press and pundits and the technology people started talking about this first. And the fact is, Azure was doing software-defined networking long before companies, small startups, were putting software-defined network somewhere in their business plan and being sold for $1 billion. In Azure, we were trying to solve real problems with the hardware-defined networking that we'd started Azure with. A great example of that is with the load balancers. We had hardware load balancers in our infrastructure. And for high availability, we had to put two of them in so that if one failed, we could switch traffic over to the other one. Similarly, for updates of that, those load balancers, we needed two to be able to do this rolling update with zero downtime. But that what we ran into was at the scale that we were operating at, those devices just couldn't scale, and they were extremely expensive and they were extremely fragile. The number of network ACLs that we had to program into them, they couldn't handle it. So we decided we have to take this into our own hands and modernize the network by putting it in software, putting that magic in software, taking it out of the hardware. And that gave us this ability to create what we call the software load balancer, SLB, which we've talked about publicly. And SLB is a scale-out architecture. We can scale out the load balancer on demand. It's all defined in software, so we can handle the appropriate the load that we need to, whatever number of ACLs we need to. We're not bound by some limitations of a fixed function device. We can program that support into the software control plane. And so software load balancer is a great example, but this applies to every aspect of networking in Azure, from the network control plane defining the virtual networks. All of that is software defined and programmatic. So connection from somebody pushing a button to deploy a virtual machine or run a PowerShell script to provision a virtual machine, all of that networking is automatically programmed at the time of that virtual machine deployment. Two gateways. We don't use gateway appliances. We use software-defined gateways. And that, again, gives us this incredible control to be able to right-size them appropriately, depending on what kind of quality of service a customer wants, add functionality to them dynamically, scale them out for availability and reliability, and to have the zero-time downtime upgrades that we need to support for those devices.
Yeah, do you remember that giddy excitement you had when you first heard about VM live migration and the agility that it would come to give you? And then you tried to use it and you realized there was this little asterisk next to it. And when you tried to live migrate your VM across a subnet, and you realized, no, you can't. And the reason was because compute virtualization really didn't deliver the agility we were looking for. You needed software-defined networking so you could move it across subnets and it would continue to run. So we delivered our first true software-defined networking stack in Windows Server 2012 R2. It was great. We had great overlay network. We had virtual machine manager controller. We had the VM switch, and we had great cloud fundamentals, right? NVGRE, RDMA NICs, VMQs, etc. But we had some gaps in that solution. The biggest gap, of course, was the reliance on partners for hardware load balancing and multi-tenant gateways. We used PowerShell to script various solutions that we didn't have a full and complete scenario support in terms of a solution. So what's great was, after that, the two teams got together. So basically, the Azure team, very large team, doing some fantastic work. We had a Windows networking team, data center networking team, doing its work. And we basically got together and put these two teams together and merged the best of the both. Windows Server, of course, is always focused in on the platform play. We define this data center abstraction layer so that we can work with networking components from lots of different environments, and we support lots of different standards. And the Azure team had great operational insight, great diagnostics, great production capabilities. So now these teams are working together to produce one deliverable. This is what I'm so excited about. This is one deliverable. Literally, with Windows Server 2000, with the next version of the products, you're going to be getting, you'll find out what that means in a few slides. In the next version of the products, you'll be getting literally the Azure bits to run your software-defined networking. So in terms of cloud scale fundamentals, we continue to support that. The data plane is based upon the Azure technology. We have this wonderful technology called Packet Direct, which allows us incredibly low overhead to manage the packets itself, right? And you'll see where this comes into play with more of the agility you can get from software-defined networking. If you do want to do something that used to be done in hardware, in software, the overhead has to be very, very low, and that's what we get. The software-defined infrastructure, again, the controller is based upon Azure technology, and then Windows Server team brought the support for things like NVGRE, VXLAN, OVSDB support. The network virtualization functions we mentioned, software load balancing that we got from Azure, the distributed firewall, and then this thing called custom service chaining. So here's the way that works. Imagine you have two machines talking to one another and you want to perform some network function. What you can do is you can have the packets go to a third VM and then get processed and then go to the original. And so that's great. In order for that to work, it has to be real overhead. Service chaining allows us to put one, two, three, however many you want, things in a stream processing model between the two endpoints. So this allows us great agility to do software processing of the network. And then, of course, we've talked about the three clouds, public, private, service provider. In order to make that work, we also want to be able to allow you to decide, I want some here and some there. So you need to support hybrid networking. And we support that with Azure Express Route, where you can get direct connection to Azure, and the multi-tenant gateway support. So, got some great sessions here. The networking overview is going to be tomorrow at 10:45. Make a note of that. You're going to go to that. Great stuff.
So the next area we'll talk about is storage. And this is another area where Azure has gone with completely software-defined storage. And there's some benefits that you get out of a hyperscale public cloud like Azure that you just cannot achieve with a hoster or an on-prem environment, and that is the supply chain efficiency, the ability to deploy these kinds of servers and optimize them at the kinds of scales that we do. Just to give you an idea of the scale that Azure Storage operates at, just one of the storage services in Azure, back in 2010, it was operating with tens of petabytes of raw storage. At this point in time, it's literally exabytes of capacity, and all operated in an automated way. All operated with zero downtime upgrades. All operated with a scale-out control plane. All operated with software durability rather than gold-plated SANs.
How many objects were you saying you had in there?
So we have 50 trillion objects now stored in the Azure storage system. 50 trillion objects. That's a pretty staggering number. Even I can't really wrap my head around the 50 trillion kind of number. But that's the kind of scale that we're operating at, all with these same kinds of cloud principles.
Yeah. So this is an area where we've been talking to you about how we're able to take the code from Azure and now make it available to you. This is an area where we're not taking the actual implementation itself, but rather we're taking the designs and we're re-implementing them at a lower design point. Now, why are we doing that? Azure's beginning storage stamp is 20 petabytes, right? And in terms of racks, it's 20 racks. How many people here have ever bought 20 racks at a time? Right. Not really?
Okay,
we got to talk. Oh, yeah. Maybe you can. Okay, but that's one. Anyway, so we have a different design center. Of course, storage is the largest and fastest growing component of data center budgets, and so we invested heavily in here. We've got some great cloud scale effective platform. We have something called Storage Spaces Direct. Now, what this is storage spaces utilizing direct attached storage. Just plummets the price of storage. You definitely want to drill in on Storage Spaces Direct. Additionally, now, that's great, you want to have, when you offer this service, as Mark mentioned earlier, you need to be able to guarantee the people you were providing the service to a certain level of assurance. If these guys are consuming all the resources and they get starved, they're not going to be so happy, they're going to go do something else. So you need to be able to allocate storage quality of service to say you get these bits, you get those bits. And the other thing about storage quality of service is it now allows us to use the same fabric for both networking and storage, further lowering the costs of the cloud. We also have hybrid storage with things like Store Simple. You have a device on premises that you're able to do your storage to, and then it's effectively a bottomless pool of storage because it acts as a cache to storage in Azure. And you have a control plane through Azure, so that works well. Of course, we have Azure Storage. And then in terms of, it's not just about storing the data, you need to protect the data, right? And so we have workload aware backup and recovery technologies with Azure Site Recovery and Azure Backup. And then something terribly exciting, and that is this idea of cross-site availability disaster recovery. So concretely, with storage, what you're able to do is you're able to configure it so that every write, there is a synchronous replication to a separate data center. Okay? Now, let me be clear. This is not like Seattle and New York. This is more like New York and New Jersey. Okay, because the write doesn't return until it's been replicated on the separate data center. Now, this is a feature that high-end SAN vendors have charged hundreds of thousands of dollars a year for, and now it's included in the offerings we have in 2016. So very exciting stuff, allows you to do stretch clusters with automatic failover or cluster-to-cluster replication. So crazy cool stuff. And you're going to find out more about that in the storage overview again tomorrow. I think these are these all in the same room? Well, I don't know. I didn't pay attention.
There's room numbers on there.
Yeah. So make a note of that. Really exciting stuff. In terms of the greatest opportunity to reduce your costs, it's this.
All right, the final area is security. And this is an area that's extremely important to a public cloud, of course. The public cloud is built on trust, and trust has several pillars. It has availability. It's got security as one of those cores. Pillars of trust. And so we've invested a tremendous amount in making sure that our infrastructure stays secure. Stay secure from malicious insiders. Stay secure from hackers that get in through the infrastructure. Stay secure from attackers that come in through the public cloud interfaces and compromise our own customers. And to do this, we've got a number of investments in the infrastructure security systems in Azure that help us protect, as well as detect, as well as mitigate problems once they show up. And the protection side, for example, we've got just-in-time access control to our production. When one of our DevOps engineers from our storage teams needs access to a storage cluster to diagnose a problem that's occurring in a particular stamp, they are granted access only because they're authorized to by a ticket that says that this stamp is having a problem, and the access they're granted only gives them access to that particular resource that is exhibiting the problem. It's time-bound as well, so after a certain amount of time, the access expires and they can no longer access it. It's heavily audited as well. So it's just in time, just enough access to production services. As when it comes to detecting, we're using
We're collecting huge amounts of telemetry off all of our systems, off our networking, off our storage, off of our VMs, off of the infrastructure systems themselves. And then the only way to actually make sense of that is to apply big data analysis and machine learning to it. So this is where we're using things like Hadoop, MapReduce clusters, in Azure. We're using machine learning algorithms to pull out the anomalous items so that we can be alerted if there's something anomalous happening. And you saw an example of that that we've made as part of a public service in Azure Active Directory Premium and some of the things Brad showed where we've got anomalous login detection. Of course, that technology was in use in our infrastructure first so that we could detect anomalous logins by DevOps personnel to our Azure infrastructure.
Yeah, right. So we really are in the second phase of the Trustworthy Computing Initiative with the security. So we're building off a base of great security that we've had for quite a while, right? File classification infrastructure, Azure Rights Management, dynamic access control. And then we're extending it. We're taking some of the lessons learned from Azure and we're bringing them on premises. The just-in-time administration feature will be available to you. We're working on the just-enough administration and the next generation credentials that come as part of Windows 10, the next phase of the operating system. But then there's the question of, Azure is this trusted company. We've got certifications through the Wazoo. We've got some of the world's best security people. You can feel confident in taking your workload and running in Azure, but we want you to have the same level of confidence when it comes to using your own private cloud or a trusted service provider cloud. So how can you do that? And so we have this idea of being able to protect your virtual machine from a potentially compromised host. So literally what that means is that with these technologies, if a hoster has a bad admin, they are still not able to get at your workload. Okay, so you're going to be able to take your VM and be able to say, I only want it to be run on these trusted hosts. So we validate that the hosts are there. And then you're able to do it so that you've encrypted or shielded the VM so that even if the host gets compromised, they can't reach in and see your data. So very exciting stuff. We also now are taking a more mature approach, the sort of assume breach. Now, assume breach is a mentality that basically says, how do I build things so that I can prevent problems? When problems do occur, how do I detect them? How do I evict them, et cetera? So we've gone through and we've been working through what events are there and what events are missing. We've been adding them. And we've been adding additional events to data to the events that exist to make sure that it's easier to detect what's truly going on when an attack occurs. Next, we're leveraging the power of the cloud to be able to do these security analytics. So you can take your event logs, put them up into the cloud, and do the engine work there, the big data analytics. Anybody ever set up a big data site? Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. So there's this great vision of being able to say, I want to do big data analytics, find the bad guy by looking at all the logs. It is wonderful. Good luck doing it on your own. It's hard. So with Operations Insight, you just move the events up. We've done that hard work for you. You can just take advantage of it. And starting with this next version of the operating system, every instance of Windows Server has the anti-malware agent in it on by default. Yeah, you like that one. One, two, three. All right, there it is. It's good stuff. By the way, it's even better. We've integrated the anti-malware agent with PowerShell. So now the anti-malware agent...
I told you not to mention PowerShell.
With the scripting language.
Here we go.
It is with the scripting language. It'll work with any scripting language. So they'll be able to check for malware in scripting languages.
Awesome.
It is wonderful. So we got the security overview and an assurance overview. That's again tomorrow at 3:15. Anders Vinberg is going to do that. Anders is a technical fellow. He's going to explain it all. He's a very good presenter. You definitely want to go to that session. Okay, so this has all been about how do we take the lessons of Azure, the cloud, and bring it to your data center. Now, Gartner had mentioned that recently that a lot of people are trying to do private clouds and failing, right? And there are a number of reasons for that, but our mission is to make sure that when you try and do a private cloud, you succeed. We want to make it easy for you to acquire, make it easy for you to deploy, make it easy for you to operate. And let's be clear here, we're talking about deploying a cloud, not just another virtualization solution. Yes, other people have virtualization solutions, those are great, but it's not that. It's about a cloud. How do you provide infrastructure as a service? How do you provide platform as a service? How do you operate and, you know, have a DevOps mentality so that you can get the true benefits of the cloud agility?
So let me talk a little bit about the Azure platform and what it consists of. We've talked about the infrastructure itself, and you've seen some of the innovations that we're moving down into the Windows Server infrastructure so you can take advantage of them. But as Jeffrey said, that's not the whole story when it comes to this cloud promise. It is the services that are on top of that. It is the virtual machine layer that's on top of that that allows you to quickly deploy a compute application consisting of lots of virtual machines in multiple tiers of an application or components of an application. And having that application also dynamically self-service provision the other services that that application needs, like a database or a storage account or a machine learning account or a big data Hadoop instance, so that that service now can start ingressing data, spitting out to Hadoop, and then doing machine learning, all as part of one coherent application. It's not just building blocks. It's looking at the system holistically, as Jeff talked about before.
I guess this is my slide. Okay, so basically this is the world as it exists today, right? So you have Azure with the cloud infrastructure, the portal services, Windows and Server, and then you've got something very similar but different on your private cloud, right? So you have Windows Server, you have System Center, you have the Azure Pack. And what we're doing is we're taking the portal and the cloud infrastructure and we're now making those available on premises. And this is the new Microsoft Azure Stack, available on-premise and for hosted clouds. Give it up. It's wonderful. It's crazy.
How many of you are familiar with Azure Pack or used it? So quite a few of you. This is, and so I've got this question before, is this the same? How is this different than Azure Pack? Azure Pack was a small subset of Azure services delivered on what we call the first generation portal. We've got a new portal in Azure, which again is designed to give you a holistic view of your resources rather than a long laundry list of individual services where teasing out what is my application out of that laundry list is an exercise left to the reader. Instead, it's a portal designed around experiences and designed around applications, built on top of service delivery that all plugs in to let you manage your applications holistically. And it's that plus a number of other services that are being made available as part of this Azure Stack. Initially, you're going to see this as another step on our journey to provide this cloud consistency that we're going to continue on.
Yeah, and you mentioned the three scenarios of app innovation, dev, going to the cloud. What were those three?
Yeah, so there's the reason that we believe so much in consistency and giving you this option. We've talked about before this transition that we're all in. And that transition and that desire for consistency between what a hosted cloud or a public cloud looks like, what your on-premises cloud looks like or your on-premises environment looks like, comes from a bunch of different scenarios. One of them is that you're doing dev test. You're taking advantage of the agility you get in the cloud to do dev test. And it might be for a workload that you can't yet move to the cloud. You won't need to put it on-prem for whatever reason, for compliance reasons, for security reasons, because of data gravity. But you take advantage of a cloud for dev test. Now you can move that application back to on-prem for production. Or it's a lot of questions I've gotten over the past few years is, okay, I see the cloud coming. What can I do to get our company ready for the cloud? What is the cloud modern application that we should start writing? How should we start writing those so that when we do move to the cloud, it's not a complete rewrite, we're not left behind? So it is that develop applications now that are modern cloud applications so that eventually you can move them to the cloud.
Let's show them that.
Let's show them that.
So first, just a sum up slide for the Azure Stack. So the Azure Stack is giving you cloud-inspired hybrid infrastructure. It's giving you cloud-consistent service delivery. By the way, notice I say cloud-consistent, not cloud-compatible. Does anyone know the definition of compatible? Do you know the definition of compatible?
No, what is it?
Different. Okay. This is not different. This is not compatible. It is consistent. It's the same code. And then that allows us these cloud-optimized application platform delivery.
So like I mentioned, one of the key parts of this Azure Stack offering is the consistent API surface for application development. And that means services that like compute, like infrastructure as a service and platform as a service, and some of these PaaS services that weren't available before on Azure Pack now being available. So for example, storage. You want blobs on premises? That's one of the services that now is part of Azure Stack. You want software-defined networking? That's now part of Azure Stack. Things that were missing from the original Azure Pack offering now being fleshed out, built on the same bits that we've got running up in Azure. And one aspect, again, I mentioned that when you talk about resources, these services, it's not enough to discreetly manage them. You lose control, especially when you're in a very agile world of these applications evolving quickly, of new applications being born every second. Keeping track of applications and how do I recreate an application becomes something that is very important. And so what we focused on is something called the Azure Resource Manager, which serves as the control plane to Azure that plugs in services so that all services have a consistent and common control plane that gives a common way of managing those services, from RBAC to tagging the services to lifecycle of those services, all done through a common set of APIs that are consistent across whatever services you're talking about. But the real power of Azure Resource Manager, I believe, when it comes to tackling this, these challenges that come with the agility of cloud applications, is the support for templates and model-based driven deployments and application lifecycle. If you could have an application model that says it consists of some compute VMs, it consists of a database, it consists of a Hadoop cluster and a machine learning endpoint, and you can describe that in one way and then hand it to the infrastructure and say, go make this, go deploy this, and by the way, make this a dev test deployment. Or it's time to put it in production, so I want it to be highly available. And you can do that with just changes in some parameters, deploying that same model for the application in different places to meet different needs. That's what Azure Resource Manager and the templates that it supports are all about. So the control plane natively understands templates, and templates really are a direct mapping one-to-one between what you want and what the Azure Resource Manager and the infrastructure beneath it make happen. So you want some VMs, they're in your template, you take a VM out of the template, you give the updated template to Azure Resource Manager, and it drives the system to look the way that you want it to look, all completely parameterized. And part of the Azure Stack promise is that you can take these application templates, anything from a GitHub Enterprise, which is something that we announced last week, deployment of a template, deploy it to public Azure, deploy it to a hosted Azure, deploy it to on-prem Azure Stack, and you get the same experience using the same application templates in all three places.
Yeah, you know, it's worth noting here that when you talk about the Azure Resource Manager, often you use terms like desired state configuration, and your very short version of the story sounds very much like my very short story version of the story about PowerShell desired state configuration. So it's worth noting that we noticed this conflict, what, about 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's like, wait, I'm doing that. No, wait, I'm doing that. And so then we drilled down, got in front of the whiteboard, and realized, oh, no, this is fine. And so the way this will actually works is that the Azure Resource Manager has a model for the entire cloud service that you're going to do. As part of that, if you have a VM, a desired state configuration document will be part of the Azure Resource Manager thing. So you get to a certain point, and then desired state configuration takes over for the management of the VM itself. Yep, so Natalia is going to deliver, Natalia and Bradley are going to deliver the Azure Consistent Service Delivery Overview. I think that's today, today, right after this session. So if you want to get there, like they're the farthest place away, you're going to have to run.
Actually, that says that it already happened.
That's not correct.
All right, so
beware of marketing people doing your slides for you. You get great colors, but you get the wrong time, so it's a trade-off.
So the next thing we're going to briefly talk about, we spent some time at Build talking about this, is Windows Server containers and Hyper-V containers. The world is moving towards containerization. How many people have heard of Docker? So I assume just about everybody in here raised their hand. Docker is becoming a standard for managing containerized
applications and deployments, a packaging format, a management system for containers. And we've worked closely with Docker, the company, to make sure that the containers we develop for Windows Server are compatible with those Docker management tools, from the Docker client to Docker engine to Docker Hub being hosted in Azure, where we serve up Docker images for Windows Server and Microsoft applications in that Docker Hub. The two types of containers we have announced, Windows Server containers, which are lightweight containers that launch on top of a shared operating system, give you maximum efficiency and density and startup cost, minimum startup cost. And then we've got Hyper-V containers. And some people are confused about, why do I want Hyper-V containers? What are they? The bottom line is that if you're creating a multi-tenant application, a SaaS application, it's a multi-tenant application where you've got tenants that you don't trust their code, they could be malicious, just like we have in the public cloud in Azure, where we've got who knows what type of attackers trying to get in and breach us, then Hyper-V containers are for you. They provide the same level of isolation guarantees as virtual machines, yet with the lightweight characteristics of the containers and with a compatible API and application model with that's compatible with Windows Server containers.
Go for it. All right, now.
Yeah, here we go.
Wait. This is Nano Server. We're announcing Nano Server. Yes. Nano Server is by far the world's or the most important, most significant change we've made to Windows Server since NT. It's a dramatic refactoring of the server. It is a headless 64-bit only deployment option of Windows Server. So it is not a SKU in and of itself. It is a deployment option of SKUs. Okay, so this is focused in on two primary scenarios, born in the cloud applications and cloud infrastructure. In fact, here, switch to 7. I'm going to show them something.
What are you doing?
I'm going to give them a demo. So I just get my notes.
Wait a minute. I'm distancing myself from this.
Wait, no, this is going to be great. Sorry, I had our...
Are those your speaker notes?
Those are my speaker notes. Yeah, sorry about that. Okay, so...
Wait a minute. It says no demos whatsoever.
Yeah, but we're up here. They can't stop us.
All right.
Okay, so this is... Let's see, let's bring this up here. Let's see. Boom, boom, boom. Make this nice and big. Okay, so this is... I got a VM running Nano Server. This is the new version of PowerShell ISE connected to it. And so look here, right? We've got the full... Now, this is core PowerShell. It's PowerShell based upon the core CLR, so it's not full PowerShell, but the full language works here. Look at that, 2 + 2, 4.
That, wow, that's correct? Impressive.
Is that correct? Yeah. Look here. Math, right? Here. It even has...
We're delivering this to them?
Yeah,
that kind
here.
Of power?
System.
Oh, I like that.
Okay.
What?
Yeah. It's good. It's good. But here, check this out. Check this out. This is just crazy. Okay, so let's do a CLS, clear. Watch this. CLS, clear. Check out how small this thing is, right? Those are the processes. A very small number of processes.
Yeah.
Nano Server is incredibly small. It's like 20 times smaller than Server Core. Again, one of the most important things we've done. You're going to want to learn a lot about that. I'm giving a couple
sessions.
All right.
Well, if you're going to do a demo, I need to do one too.
Wait, hey, dude, that's my laptop.
There we go. It's pretty awesome.
Okay.
All right, we better switch back before we get into big trouble.
We're going to get in trouble.
Yeah. Hey, what's the switch back here? Oh, man. All right. Okay, so one of the other things we talked about at Build last week, we released the public preview SDK for something called Service Fabric, because once you get into containers, containers are really amenable to what we call microservices, where you take an application and you decompose it into smaller pieces where you can independently manage, scale out, update, develop those smaller pieces and pack them together or not for maximum agility and have the application work in the most optimal way. It's, again, a very big change from the traditional IT scale-up monolithic architectures that we've seen before, getting decomposed, and that's what gives you the agility. But what you need is an application platform that lets you manage the complexity that comes along with that kind of decomposition. How do you do a rolling update to just one set of microservices? How do you scale out a cluster underneath the microservices? How do you manage the health of those microservices so that if a server or virtual machine goes bad, those microservices are automatically healed? You need to do that. You need to get that kind of automation if you're going to run at scale, and that's exactly what Service Fabric is aimed at. More information in some sessions here that you'll see at Ignite, and as well as some of the presentations that we had at Build last week.
So we get a lot of questions about, hey, how do I think about this nano server? How do I think about containers? Do I code to containers? Do I code to nano server? What about blah, blah? So here's what's going on. We're doing a deep refactoring of the server. At the base is nano server. Then there's an additional set of APIs on top of that. We'll call that server. It used to be called server core, right? Windows server is, nano server is just a subset of Windows server. So it's API compatible for the components on there. On top of that, there's something we used to call full server. That was a bad name. Now we call it server with a GUI. We'll probably end up calling it something like the client experience, because that's really what it is. It's a client stack on top of a server. Now you might ask yourself, why would you ever put a client stack on top of a server? And the answer is for RDS and small business server. Okay? So here's what's going to happen. Developers are going to get in Visual Studio, and they're going to target server or nano server. They'll get a full Visual Studio experience, squiggle lines, tell you when you're using APIs that you shouldn't, et cetera. Then you're going to build that, and then you deploy it to either physical, virtual, there should be a comma there. Again, watch out for your marketing guys. So physical, virtual, or to containers. So you code to something, server, nano server, and then you run it in something, physical, virtual, containers. All right, so now we've talked about this cloud anywhere, right? Cloud, public cloud, private cloud, managed service cloud. The reality is that in addition to those things, you have instances of Windows and instances of Linux running in lots of places. Some of you have stuff in AWS, some of them you have in Rackspace, et cetera. And what we want to do is we want to be able to manage everything that you have wherever it is. And with that, I'm going to introduce superstar Jeremy back on stage if he hasn't fallen asleep. Jeremy. Jeremy,
where are you? All
right, Jeremy. Jeremy. Everybody, he's waiting for you. Applaud. Where's my applause?
Hey, you guys are quite the duo. How much time is left here?
It's right there. Can I borrow that?
Yeah. Yeah, let's borrow you, Jeff. Hey, let's give these guys a round of applause. All right, Mr. SysInternals and Mr. PowerShell. Okay, so like I said, I'm Jeremy Winter, and make sure I can get to that slide. There we go. I'm Jeremy Winter, and my teams are responsible for all the management technology that these guys build, and we start to bring those into your data centers. And so when you think about just what's happening at IT right now, it's absolutely incredible. I am just amazed at the amount of innovation that's happening right now, not just from the foundation and the fabrics that are out there, but the amount of tools and technologies that you guys are able to start to go find. Whether it's with startups or big companies like Microsoft, there is just a mass amount of this innovation happening that, you know, when we were running systems 10 years ago, we only dreamed of having. And so this is just one of those key things that we've just been watching in the industry from our side. And as we start to look at this, your environments are still complex. I mean, we chatted earlier when we were starting to talk through at the beginning. You've got a lot of physical environment, you got a lot of virtual, we're just now starting to sprawl out to the cloud, and you're really thinking like, man, this stuff is complex, and I've still got the pressure of my development and business organizations that are rolling as fast and faster and putting more pressure on you when you have to think about, how do I retain reliability? How do I think about making sure the costs and everything I need to go do inside my environment can still happen? And so that pressure hits for us IT guys that manage these large environments. And so you're not alone. I mean, the folks that I chatted with this morning, you're not alone. We've had these conversations. I meet with customers weekly. Whether I'm out at the sites with them or on the phones listening, we see these time and time again. Hey, Jeremy, I just need to help reduce this infrastructure. The amount of infrastructure I need to go manage my environments is just insane. Help me get time to value faster. I want to be able to take advantage of these things without a 6-month install before I even can go out and try it and use it. Help me go use flexibility with my tools. Help me go use all these tools that I'm already using. And help me start to see how I can bring them together without forcing a ton of time of integration. And so those are some of the shifts that I start to see and we're starting to watch with in our own prioritization with the engineering team on the management side. And so when you hear Brad earlier today talk about any cloud, any operating system, really running on any stack, that's the focus that you're seeing us start to spend on the management side. And so when you think about this thing to switch here. Yeah, perfect. And so those are some of the technologies I'm starting to, or started the, some of the shifts I'm starting to see, but there's a few others that I wanted to walk through in more specific detail. As I've spent, I just spent quite a bit of time in Europe, and these main themes really hit us quite a bit as we started to talk through the customers. Management as a service. Help me get out of that infrastructure that I already have. Let me start to go look at using the cloud. Data and analysis and analytics. This is changing the way we think about monitoring all up and the way we think about the data across our systems. No longer are we having to go through like the traditional way of management, tweaking and looking at our boxes and making sure like what is it the event that I want to capture and how many times do I care about the threshold? Look, just get the data in. Just start to get this data in a much more faster way and we'll bring this content all together for you. And as you start to look at that data, we can go get quite a bit of other views in it. And so it really changes the way we start thinking about management, not just for your monitoring, but what's going on in inventory and other aspects. These guys are talking a lot about the cloud, a lot about moving workloads to the cloud, and as we see more workloads being in the cloud and we start to see and we assume that we'll have more workloads running in cloud environments than on the on-premises in the next 5 years, we need to make sure we have management there for you. And then you heard Jeffrey talk about nano servers and containers and what we're doing with that, and this is going to change again how IT thinks about how you manage your environment. Because the fluidity of these are going to be changing, right? You heard Jeffrey start with the word pet. But when you start to think about microservices and containers, you're going to be starting to use words like cattle. And they're going to be moving, and you're going to want to manage them differently. And they'll also help you think about repivoting your business. Okay, so when we think about these shifts, it's not the first time we've seen these shifts from a Microsoft point of view. We've had the enterprise desktops, whether it's server proliferation, whether it's you starting to really take advantage of virtualization and then pivoting to the cloud. We've been here for you as a management technology and management bet that you could be with for the long haul. And we're going to help you move as you move to IT as a service. And when I say that, I don't mean only to the cloud. I mean just as you as IT start to go work, almost like a service provider to your own business, providing service to your developers in your business. So this shift is occurring, and this is part of the reason we, as we start to talk about some of the capabilities as you evolve to modern management. Now, when you think about management and the two levels of investments that are really primarily happening inside here, and we'll have sessions in these. My teams are doing lots of sessions on System Center, lots of sessions on the services. Two separate but complementing systems. So let me talk to you a little about System Center. You saw in the keynotes today, if you watched with Brad, we've got System Center 2016 on the books. Every component that's in System Center today, those major components, whether it's Config Manager, SCOM, VMM, Service Manager, DPM, Orchestrator, the new work we did with Service Management Automation, all of these components are inside the next version of System Center. Now, next week, you'll have available the Tech Preview 2, and we'll continue to do these tech previews. One of the key things you should think about when we're thinking about the System Center components is we've moved to the quarterly update type approach. So UR6 just released last week. And the core that I want you to take away with UR6 and these quarterly updates is we're starting to go flight features into the product line in real every quarter. It's just a faster cadence we're bringing to the management stack. And we find this is important for a couple of reasons. Number one, we don't think you should have to wait for 2 years to be able to have improvements or new features come in. Example, over the last few months, we've heard we want Virtual Machine Manager to be able to talk to Azure directly for those customers that are using Virtual Machine Manager and starting to have instances running in Azure. So in UR6, we delivered it, literally 3 to 4 months after. So in UR6, you'll see this capability come down the line. Massive amounts of improvements are coming through those channels. And this will play forward when you get to the 2016, as we continue to flight on a quarterly basis features and improvements every quarter, and making sure instead of these heavy migrations where you're having to move, say, from an Ops Manager 2007 to a 2012 R2, which is a massive upgrade, we really want to make sure that you're able to go directly in place and upgrade. And we could tell already from some of the downloads that are coming through that it's a massive amount of downloads. When we first started this, it'd take a couple months, and now we're seeing thousands and thousands of downloads within the first day as we drop these URs. Okay, so the core thing when you think about modern management, and I'm jumping ahead a little bit on this, is just heterogeneous and open platform is kind of the core back inside. Now, when you think, like, how does this stuff fit together? Think about it as your system center. The system center you use today on premises, you will continue to support Linux and VMware, and we're adding capabilities for LAMP stack. We've got more stuff we're doing with storage and network providers. But it also reaches out to those investments that you use in the cloud. I hear time and time, hey, the system center, I've got things running in Amazon. Can I start to monitor and control and orchestrate over those using the infrastructure they already have? Absolutely. And we've partnered with them to continue to do that. We've also do this with Office 365 as you're starting to take advantage of those. Your Ops Manager infrastructure will be able to monitor those with the Ops Manager infrastructure that you have in place. Now, to complement those, we've brought in our services work. And you heard Brad talk a little bit about this today, but our services, we've brought these in so you could be able to complement your existing systems. Now, last year, we did a sneak preview of the Op Insights work a year ago. And we literally made sure that from within your Ops Manager consoles, you could light this service up. Now, I met with a customer, last year we took this customer and we were at the booth and he wanted to be signed up before the even session we first had. He'd seen some of the Twitter feeds happening in real time. So we took that in, we signed him up, and I bumped into him just like I was walking through here, bumped into him ahead of the session. And overnight, he had added over 1,600 machines to the environment and seen what his top problems were immediately. So I feel like we really did make it easy for you to take advantage of that. Okay, so as we talked about it, if we think about the cloud, one of the other big announcements we did today was just the operations management suite. This is a cloud-based management solution. This is really tailored at wherever your clouds are, or if it's even on-premises. So most of the stuff that's currently running inside here, and we've been working on this for a while, are on-premises and sitting in this space. We've got 10,000 plus customers that have already been working with us in this area, and so we've been building this out in real time with the customers. And this innovation cadence is really important when we think about it, because I really have been pushing our teams to make sure that these capabilities, we drop them to our customers like you. We'll have cohorts or small groups that we can get these out to you early and start to test and build. And then we'll take, if anyone's participating, you'll see right in their user voice, and that'll start the flywheel for our teams to just continue to innovate. And that's the importance for what we're doing there. Now, this is going to continue to be an area when we start to look at what we're building, we're going to continue to reach deeper into the other clouds, and we're also going to make sure that we've got a spot for our partners to continue to add additional solutions on top of this as well. Because we know that as we look at different tools that you have in your environment and different partners that you use, that it's important for you to be able to bring the heterogeneous technologies plus tools. And so we're going to work with our partners to be able to pull that in so they can take advantage of the data that we bring into this system as well. And so that's a really important key piece for us as we go forward and build this. So Operations Management Suite brings these technologies together and core to how we're thinking about it. Now, as the devs started to go build this out, we started with these at the top. We started with the analytics, automation, and recovery. But we also then started to go listen to your feedback and started adding solutions on top of this. And so you saw some of those solutions today when Jeff Woolsey came up and demonstrated Op Insights and some of the other capabilities in the Operation Management Suite. But that analytics is only the start of it. Automation is the central theme of this, as well as the work we did to help back up and bring a site recovery so that you've got that all brought in. Then we started adding other capabilities and solutions. So we brought in the security logs, and then we started to listen, and the customers wanted us to bring in, help me understand what else is going on in my security environment. And so we continue to add and rev on the security logs. Second piece that we added is we started to add updates and change and dashboards so you can build your own custom views into it. And we will continue to innovate on this work over the course of the next 6 to 12 months. It's a flywheel. It's iterative. It's going to happen in real time with the services, and that's the approach we're taking. So these technologies that are in the pipeline right now, some of customers have early versions, have started to build and get early versions to access to. But these are the types of technologies that are already in the pipeline. And you can see these unfold over the next 6 to 12 months. and you'll continue to bring and innovate in this space. We are not done, we've just started, and we're going to continue to push and innovate in this direction. So again, now, how do I think about this as easing the transition with our overall technology stack? I hear a lot about the cloud, but now you're telling me you've got System Center 2016 on the way, and as well as 2012. How do I think about each, Jeremy? What do you want me to go think about on these? And so the first is, if you have on-premises requirements, whether it's regulatory, or you've done mass customizations of our platforms that we've built, or you just need to be completely isolated from the internet, continue. This is here for you. We're going to continue to build this and continue to invest in it. We're not walking away. This is an investment that we are there for you for the long haul. If you have the traditional management scenarios and you've got your reporting and your data warehouses, this is a good system. If you're ready to go to the cloud and you're starting to think about IT MaaS and you want to go start to think about how I can improve my cloud, my OpEx, my unified management, and I want this cloud type solution, I don't want you to have to go build individual clouds or go build individual management tools. I don't want you to have to go get something separate. I think that these should be baked right into the management stack. And so that's a different shift that we're taking, and we're going to start by building with Azure, and we have been, and we're going to help that expand broader to the other systems. So today we have the support for multiple clouds. The other thing that we're going to do is you'll have a choice in licensing. Now if you go to microsoft.com/OMS, the site's already up. You can try now. I see a bunch of people writing with the pens. Microsoft.com/OMS. The site's up. You can go start to look at it. We've got pricing available for you in it. And you'll see that you can do pay-as-you-go per component or the overall suite. Okay, so as I wrap up, just know that we've got System Center, a new service that's, or we've got System Center and a whole roadmap session that's going to be tomorrow afternoon. And we'll dive deep down into each of these components, and we'll spend about 20 minutes just doing tech drill downs and demos just of the new OMS suite, as well as the System Center products. Anyway, thank you, and have a great show, guys, and I appreciate all your time.